You're listening to Well Made. I'm Stefan Ango, co-founder of Lumi. My whole life, I've been asking myself the same question. What does it mean to make things well? This is the show where we talk to creators, entrepreneurs, movers and shakers, people who have become experts in their field and can shed light on that simple question, what makes something well made? Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So I thought it'd be fun to have you guys over just because I really love MeUndies. You guys have been doing such amazing work since 2011, right? Is that when you started?
Yeah, I launched December 2011.
It's kind of crazy because it still feels kind of new in a way. It has like a very fresh vibe. I mean, it's part of the brand, but it's also, I'm just now starting to meet people who are familiar with it for the first time. So it's still growing quite a bit. Talk about the early days of MeUndies. What was that like? 2011 was like right at the beginning of some of this like new wave of e-commerce that was coming about, like Everlane and Warby Parker and those types of people were just starting around that time. Like what kind of inspired you to get involved in internet underwear?
What initially like kind of got me interested in this space was kind of a real story out of frustration. Mm. So I was going on a trip with my buddies overseas and found myself not having enough underwear. Like most guys yeah. in their mid-20s, like it was definitely the last thing I thought about. So, I mean, naturally went to the mall to kind of buy some underwear and was in Macy's and kind of was actually like, I remember vividly being like very terrified about asking the lady that worked there where their underwear section was, but she kind of led me to their section. And I just remember it being kind of overwhelming. You had many brands, you know, I would say 10 plus brands. Within each section, there were multiple styles within the same style. So you had four or five different kinds of boxer briefs and trunks. And there was this one go-to pair I had that I used to buy from Calvin Klein. And I thought I was buying the ones I normally buy, grabbed four or five pairs and was kind of shocked at how expensive they were. Mm. I still wasn't getting enough underwear for my trip, but I figured, you know, I'll do laundry or something. So check out at the counter, they're like $30 each yeah. and get home, open the box and they're workout underwear. Mm. So it wasn't the best experience. And there were companies launching at that time, like, or had already launched like Shoe Dazzle and I think Beach Mint was around at the time and really was thinking about, you know, what I can, you know, out of frustration kind of came up with the idea and wanted to do my own thing. I was working for my dad's real estate company at the time and was really trying to think about, you know, how I can kind of create my own thing. And I was with my buddy on the trip who launched Sweetgreen. And so he was always like a soundboard for ideas that I had. And we were chatting in a little coffee shop and I was telling him this whole story and it kind of hit both of us, you know, that, you know, this could be an item that you could replenish and create a subscription for. And so kind of headed back home after that trip and just started working on it.
Now at the time, because I feel like the boxer brief as a piece of clothing, I don't know when it became like a popular item, but it was really kind of a thing like right around that time, I think, that people discovered that was a thing that they could wear instead of boxers or briefs. Am I right about that? I don't know.
Maybe a little before. I think boxer briefs, like probably in the last 15 years, really became very popular.
I feel like they're now the dominant underwear. Am I wrong?
No. I mean, it's by far a bestseller.
Because, yeah, I mean, in 20 years ago, it would have been boxers or briefs, not boxer briefs, right?
For sure, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I was exposed to that kind of early on from growing up in France. Like that was like I grew up there and like that was like the main type of underwear that I grew up wearing for some reason.
The Euro brief?
Yeah, I don't know. No, not the Euro brief, the boxer brief.
Oh, the boxer brief.
Because those were very popular. There's a lot of underwear is like a very, like there's a lot of advertising for underwear in France for some reason. And so you're exposed to it maybe a little more, but it's still the same thing. It's all fancy boxes, very expensive. There's a lot of brands. It's all the same type of problem. It's not something that you're going to go to a store and try out, right? You have to I don't think they'll let you do that.
No, you can't try it on. So that was also kind of one of the things that we were thinking about. But it's funny, I was actually, as a part of that trip, was in Paris and came across the Couples brand while I was out there.
Oh, yeah.
And was kind of immediately fell in love with their marketing. Mm. And so a lot of the early inspiration for the Couples within the company and the advertising came actually from that trip.
Oh, wow. So you had this idea. And then what was like the beginnings of it? Because you had to actually manufacture this product. And presumably that wasn't something that you had done before. So how did you go from zero to something?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it was just, you know, countless hours on Google and doing research and looking at other brands and funny Craigslist ads looking for underwear designers and help manufacturers and whatnot. You know, it was a slow process initially. I was still, when I came back, working for our family office. But eventually just started kind of thinking through how I want to build this thing. And one of my best friends approached me and said he would love to like kind of join and co-found the company. And so very early on, he was a lot of help getting this thing off the ground. But yeah, it took like about a year of research, development, and finding the right manufacturer to kind of get it off the ground.
And at what point did you guys go through the science incubator? Or like, when did that come about?
So that came about pretty early on. We had a splash page that just said, like, coming soon, with a very early logo that we never actually launched with. It was a MeUndies logo, and the M actually had a pair of underwear on it.
Oh, wow.
If I can dig that up, I got to show you. But basically, I remember what happened was is one of the guys at Science signed up for our coming soon page. We were monitoring the emails hitting that page pretty closely. Sean Percival actually was who introduced us to Science. And so we reached out to him and, you know, set up a meeting, and subscription commerce was kind of taken off in a big way. And he had written an article actually that kind of coined the term sub-commerce.
Interesting.
So we met him up for coffee and kind of told him our story and our vision. And we actually had done some test shoots already. So we kind of had some visuals for the brand that really identified very well with the Science group. They loved kind of the direction of where it was going and wanted to kind of get involved. We took it pretty far. So we already pretty much had a product and website. Everything was really ready to go. And we were the first actual Science company.
Really?
So, yeah, it was pretty amazing. I remember meeting with them early on. I think they were officing at a Rustic Canyons office. And then eventually they had a co-working space. But we met with Mike Jones first and kind of explained to him kind of the vision of where we wanted to take this thing. And I think it was about maybe a couple weeks later that he had us meet with Peter, and it was amazing. I remember this very vividly. We were in Santa Monica, and we took like a long walk kind of around Santa Monica, and just were vibing with him very well, and we both really liked each other, and yeah, we were able to work something out, so it was great.
But it's a different business model than a lot of other investment firms, right? I mean, it's not an accelerator like the Y Combinator or just a plain old venture firm that simply invests money. They seem to really become a more integral part of the team, or is that wrong?
Yeah, I mean, I think early on they were trying to figure it out. I think they wanted to be part incubator / advisors and investors. And what I really appreciated about the early days and in the Science office was the synergy you got from the other brands and companies and founders.
Who else was there at the time?
So there was Aaron from Dog Vacay. Sean Percival had Whittleby. Mike Dubin from Dollar Shave Club. And there may have been like one or two other companies there. But it was basically this small little core group of people. And none of us had launched our companies yet, or were right about to. Mike Dubin from Dollar Shave Club literally used to sit inches away from me. We were up on small little like 2 feet desks side by side. And I remember coming in the morning, every morning I'd come in and his desk and all these things, Dubin would have it laid out all over my desk, and I'd totally get pissed off at him. Like, dude, take your shit off my desk.
I imagine that there must have been a little bit of cross-pollination there, because the business models have, you know, similarities, and some of the customers might have been the same. Do you feel like there was a little bit of things that maybe rubbed off on you or on him from that early stage?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. We were all sitting in rooms brainstorming at times about like how we can do this great. I have some amazing pictures from back in the day of us kind of sitting around the table brainstorming. So, yeah, I mean, we were all for the most part in the subscription commerce space and launching or relaunching our brands.
And so that was what year was that? 2012.
That was 2012. Yeah.
So since then, like, I mean, tell me more. I mean, what's the scale of it today, and how do you, you know, what were some of the key maybe milestones and learnings and turning points maybe that you can remember?
Yeah, some milestones were definitely waking up one morning and there was this website, I mean, still around, Uncrate. They were huge for us early on. We woke up one morning and they had written an article and we went pretty much zero to something very quick. Then from then, it was just very scrappy for many years. We never really overraised or raised that much capital. The VC world wasn't very friendly to us early on. I think they kind of looked at the brand and laughed a little bit at like both the name and just the nature of the business. But just so, I mean, put it in perspective, this year we'll sell somewhere around 4 to 5 million pairs of underwear. So it's been an amazing journey.
Wow. Yeah. One thing that I've always been impressed with, because we started doing packaging for you guys about a year ago, maybe a little more. We interact with thousands of companies every year. We only have a small window into this, but MeUndies is one of the best organized in terms of like supply chain that we interface with. Like for example, in July, we have a code word. We're starting this project on the marketing side, which is going to be our Christmas in July campaign, which is like trying to get people to start thinking about Christmas season in the summer because, you know, most of our customers being e-commerce brands do a lot of business around Black Friday, around Christmas, but they
think about buying their packaging last minute.
Yeah, exactly. When, you know, for us, our big months are like August and September because some of these things have long lead times. There's design and structural engineering that might have to happen. And people are coming to us and it's literally December or like the end of November. And they're like, hey, you know, Black Friday is next week. I need to do this project. And it's like, well, that's not possible. And we've never had anything like that ever with MeUndies. It's always been really awesome to work with you guys. And I just putting that operational structure in place at an early stage is just really, really hard. And I'm curious how you guys did it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it happened over time. As good as a job as we do, there were definitely times and moments I remember where early on, I don't think we were working with you, but we ran out of packaging and we'd have to go last minute to Uline and get poly bags and throw our logo on them. And I mean, this is like really early on, but I remember packing orders and just trying to get them out the door during the holidays. But, you know, I mean, hats off to our team. We've got an amazing project management team and we're constantly just trying to improve season by season. And so we're already starting to think about Valentine's Day right now.
For next year. For context, that's like basically 10 months away.
Yeah. I mean, these are big, big moments in our company. And we constantly want to get better and better and be more thoughtful about how we launch our campaigns. And it takes a lot of planning. So, you know, I mean, right now we're just starting to kick off brainstorming sessions, but you know, it's refreshing knowing that, you know, we're getting ahead of the ball.
You guys have moved into, over time, doing more and more seasonal campaigns, more collaborations, that kind of stuff. What does the cycle look like? So you're in the example of this Valentine's Day project that you're starting now for next year. What are the kind of different phases that goes through?
You mean from a campaign perspective?
Yeah, from the whole development, because presumably, you know, it's coming up with the designs, you know, how you're going to approach it. If you're starting, you know, let's say 10 months ahead of time for a project like that, you know, how do you get through that? What are the kind of steps to it?
Yeah, I mean, again, we have an amazing project management team, but, you know, the early steps are kind of just a brainstorming session, kind of jot down all of our thoughts and notes. And from there, you'll have our brand and growth team have a meeting with Consumer Insights to kind of pick up on some learnings from the year before, what worked, what didn't work, what type of prints resonated with people. We dig pretty deep there. And then from there, once they've kind of created the brief, the brand team will start trying to identify potential partners that we could collaborate with. And then from that point, it'll go to the creative team, will kind of make it, put it in a beautiful deck and visualize it and start thinking about, you know, what that'll start look like visually. And they work very closely hand in hand with our product development team. So from there, really, it's gone almost full circle. Then there'll be a handoff to digital product. And so they'll start thinking about, you know, what the landing page experience will look like. And then throughout that entire process, we'll obviously be talking to our partners like yourself about packaging, and, you know, that'll all be a part of the process.
Yeah, I'm assuming, I guess I haven't been to other underwear brands' websites recently, but I'm assuming they tend to probably stay pretty static. Whereas, you know, you're doing business direct to consumer, the homepage of MeUndies changes, I don't know, multiple times a month, I'm assuming. Like, it's very regular. There's a lot of new stuff. It's exciting.
Yeah, I mean, we're launching, I think, anywhere between 3 and 5 different designs and colors every single month. And so, you know, week by week, the homepage is changing by design. And I think our customers love that energy that we're bringing and that constant freshness.
Yeah, I think if I was going to ask for one word for MeUndies, most people would probably say fun or something like that. You know, it's very playful. That becomes something that is an interesting brand value, but challenge, I'm assuming, also organizationally, because people might have different definitions of fun. Like, what is fun to MeUndies? How do you make sure that everybody on your team is on the same page about what is fun?
Yeah, I think, I mean, we're an inclusive brand. And so we try and really make what does fun look like to a broad range of people. I mean, we're an adventurous brand. And so you may see us kind of put something out there with yoga, you know, it may be rock climbing. It's just really, we're going after just fun, energetic people that we feel like that are relatable. And so, you know, it could be really anything. Our customer vary in age. So, you know, we have customers in their mid-50s and we have customers in their early 20s. And so when you have that kind of a vast range of an audience, like, you can really do anything.
Yeah, I think the thing that I'm wondering about also is, however well organized you might be, there's always, you know, business is business. There's going to be periods of time where it's like stressful or deadlines are coming up, and somehow you still have to fit in that element of fun while working under pressure. Is it the people that you hire? Is there a way to get organized around, like, let's make sure we don't forget the fun element of this?
Yeah, I mean, we try and remind the team that we're selling underwear at the end of the day and to have fun with it, like, not to take themselves too seriously. And I think that's a part of our DNA. Like, we definitely work really hard, and there's times where, you know, people are literally there into the morning or sleeping even at the office. It's happened. It's a passionate group of people. And I think, like, when you have the passion and you've got a team that treats each other like family, it's not work anymore. And so I think that resonates in the stuff we do. I think our customers see that. And we really lead with our team first. And I think it just naturally resonates to our customers.
How many people are at MeUndies now?
So it's a team of a little bit over 90 now.
Wow. Yeah, I went to the office recently and I was just amazed by the whole place. It's just so cool. And are you guys also doing all your fulfillment there? Like, is everything made, like, actually shipped out there?
Yeah,
it's
so
amazing.
All of our fulfillment and customer support is done in-house. Unfortunately, we're kind of reaching a point that we're running out of space in this office. And so our fulfillment center is going to be moving into a separate facility, and it'll be really sad to kind of see them go. They won't be far, but, you know, having them in our office pretty much from day one really kind of gave a sense of, like, that energy when you would launch a campaign or an email would go out and you saw those pairs getting packed immediately in orders. Really kind of gave yourself of accomplishment and that energy in the office of that hustle on the other side. Like, it's definitely something special.
Well, I think that's something, we're still lucky to have some of that at Lumi as well, because we have our office and our warehouse are connected together. And so there's something special about having a direct connection between, you know, if you're a designer or doing marketing, the output of what you're just doing on the computer is more real to you when you get to see the physical stuff that has to then get shipped out and all the people, like all those orders become actually real to you. Whereas if it's in some other building, it's a bit isolated from what you're doing every day. So I think that's really special, but it is amazing that you guys were able to like keep it in house for that long.
Yeah. I mean, last year we probably shipped out a little over 2.5 million pairs out of that office. So, I mean, it'll kind of just put the numbers in perspective, and I think they're going to be very much missed. I mean, obviously they're not going to be far, but not having them in their day to day, we're definitely going to feel it early on. So we're going to have to figure out ways to really like bring that energy and vibe into the office.
Do you have a plan for that? That's an interesting challenge.
I mean, we already do a lot of fun things, and I think what we're going to need to really keep top of mind is how we're going to create moments where the warehouse team can join us in the office. So we have like kind of all hands on deck meetings and events. You know, we do a lot of fun things week by week. Yesterday we did an amazing leadership group gathering where we kind of broke people out into groups, and we were just talking about how we can communicate better. And we did something for International Women's Day, very similar. And both sides of the office really kind of joined. And for Mental Health Awareness Week, tomorrow actually, we're going to do another event. So these moments in our office kind of bring everyone together, and we get to interact and really kind of, you know, get deep. And that's what's really kind of special. And so I'm hoping that, you know, even after they kind of move into their own facility, we can still have these kind of special events and moments.
Yeah, it happens in the growth of any company that you sort of hit a point where communication, for example, you were just talking about, becomes harder. There are more people that need to stay on the same page about something. Are there other kind of moments like that that you look back on where, you know, you had to solve that and eventually you figured it out? Like, you know, those kind of breaking points where the things that you kind of had built up until that point just suddenly break down and you have to figure it all out again.
Yeah, I mean, I think like the introduction of like Slack and Asana were kind of huge project management and efficiency tools. Prior to that, it was a lot of emails, shouting, kind of things getting lost in the mix. But I think like every, you know, couple years, you kind of evaluate your systems and you got to rebuild them. They eventually break, and you know, everything from your accounting software to your back end, you know, management tools. And so it's just constant, you know, that every stage of your company, you kind of, you're at that next level to kind of reevaluate your back end and how you're doing things.
Yeah, I think that's something that they don't tell young entrepreneurs. It's like, oh yeah, everything's going to break soon. And the first time you go through that, you're like, I feel like we just went through this. And then it becomes just like the natural state of things. And you're like, well, it's going to happen again soon.
Totally.
Yeah. That's when you become the true Zen master.
Yeah, totally. But I think it's also important to like simplify early on.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need to be on, you know, some advanced custom-made software. I mean, we were using QuickBooks Pro Online until very recently. And so I think you just got to be nimble and be scrappy early on and just kind of, you know, move quickly.
Yeah, you have to be defensive of your own time. Yeah, it's very easy to waste time trying to like build something or waste money on some piece of software that's completely unnecessary.
Totally.
I wanted to talk to you about collaborations too, because we got sidetracked a little bit, but you did this thing with Eddie Huang.
Yeah.
I loved the promo that you did with him. The video kept showing up all the time in my Facebook. I think it's great. I've like trained the Facebook advertising algorithm to only show me like things that are from like our customers or people that we might want to work with. It's great. I kept seeing that ad that was so funny and just, I don't know, it seemed like the perfect fit, but I don't really know that much about him.
Yeah, I actually didn't know Eddie before this campaign. He's an amazing individual. We actually met last week. He came by the office, but the relationship happened very organically. We were working with someone and she introduced us to Eddie, and he really gravitated towards this panda print we were thinking about launching, and he actually dubs himself as the human panda.
Yeah, there's also this incredible meme that says, destroy racism, be like a panda. He's black, he's white, he's Asian, and he's chubby. And I feel like that's really my life. It's not just a memo, it's a mission statement. I don't really have a mantra, and I never really overthought it. I'm my own shit. I created my own place in America, and I'm a human panda. I never in my wildest dreams thought I would be chosen for an underwear campaign. My manager told me they want to put billboards of your husky ass in their underwear, and I couldn't believe it.
And so we met with him and, you know, told him we were launching this pair, and he got really, really excited. And at the time, we were just kind of thinking about what the collaboration can be. And naturally, what ended up happening is he ended up kind of picking up on a lot of our core values about body positivity and inclusivity. And by accident, I mean, really, this whole campaign kind of went viral. I mean, GQ, Esquire, Huffington Post, they all kind of wrote about it. And it was amazing to see him tie so well into what was important to us. It was not scripted at all. We didn't tell him what to talk about. But he just felt so near and dear to our brand and what we stood for. And he was so impressed that we were willing to put him up on a billboard. He was really shocked to be asked to kind of do an underwear campaign. And so,
well, he's not who you would typically call like an underwear model. I think when you say underwear model, people have an image in their mind of what that person looks like. And he doesn't look like that. But so do most of the people who buy your underwear. People don't, you know, have like huge abs and stuff like that, right? So the MeUndies brand is maybe less aspirational around what people's bodies should look like and maybe more aspirational about what they should be like as people.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you nailed it. We want our new tagline is like, do what feels good. And that really ties into being comfortable in your own skin and not worrying about what other people think. And I think he is a perfect example of that. And we're really proud for him to be kind of an ambassador and partner of ours.
So collaborations, that's going to keep happening?
Yeah, we've got a couple fun ones in the works. Another one that is slated to come out this summer is with Cross Colors, the old brand from the 90s. You know, again, they've got some amazing values, clothing without prejudice, and they were really kind of leading the way in the early 90s. And so we're totally excited to be working with them and launching in early summer.
So you guys went through like a big revamp of the brand. I think it just came out, what, like the past couple weeks, right?
Yesterday, actually.
Yesterday? Yeah. Wow. Tell me about that. Tell me about that process. Why did you decide to do that? What was that like?
I think early on, we were very different when we came to market. But as you grow, other brands kind of launch, and you'll start noticing kind of a lot of similarities in language and marketing. And what we found is a lot of the newer companies that were coming out, they were kind of using the same tagline, the same offers, and we really wanted to differentiate ourselves. And so we kind of went away from this comfort-based business, although our product's amazing, to really trying to create a platform that enabled our customers to feel good about themselves and like what we were talking about earlier. So we're wanting to be more of a mission-based company and really kind of pave the way for others, I think. I feel like as a brand, you have a voice, and I mean, looking back, if we see we've kind of changed one person's idea about, you know, the status quo, I think we'd be proud as a company. And so, you know, I feel like we're creating that platform right now, and I'm really proud about like where things are kind of going.
So there was a new logo and some new sort of typography and like kind of the look and feel, but it sounds like there's also this aspect that's maybe more philosophical about what the kind of the meaning behind the company is. What is that? Like, how do you define that? What did you guys come to?
Yeah, I mean, definitely we refreshed the logo, but more than anything, it was really leading with, like I said, this new platform that that really fosters inclusivity. So for Pride and that's coming up, we did a huge campaign. It's our biggest investment to date. And it really is like supporting the LGBT community. And we're super proud about that. And I think not a lot of brands have that confidence. And I hope we, by kind of showing the world that we can kind of think outside the box, like we'll allow other people to kind of also feel like they can kind of push the envelope and it becomes the norm. It's no longer kind of a tactic, and it's not for us. I mean, for us, it's something that is near and dear to a lot of our people in our office. We've got a very diverse group of people, And I think that represents the world and our, and you know, our customer base. And so we want to make sure that we're a 360 brand that's thinking about everybody.
Yeah. You were saying earlier that it's important for your team to remember that you guys are just making underwear, so like have fun with it. I think what you're saying kind of speaks to that to some extent. Like, I feel the same way sometimes too, because we sell cardboard. We sell like these things that are commodities, things that people take for granted. People, you know, people don't necessarily think about their underwear that much. But if you have this, like you said, as a platform, you have an opportunity to like layer in some meaning or some a message or an idea or a concept of what you think the world should be like. And you can put that into a pair of underwear. I think that's like so cool.
Yeah, it's the first thing you put on in the morning, right? Yeah. And so if we can give you just that little bit of subconscious confidence, you start your day with a feeling of like pride and you're excited that you're kind of wearing something that no one else can see except you kind of know it deep down. And it's your way of kind of standing out. I mean, even though no one else is looking at it, but you know, we have people that are, you know, in corporate offices wearing suits and don't, right. but wearing a pair of Panda underwear, right?
Exactly.
So we hope that gives you kind of the confidence throughout the day to just be you. And it seems to be working.
Yeah. I mean, don't take yourself too seriously. It's probably a good message for almost every company to hear. Who do you consider your competition, or like, where do you like look when you're looking out, whether it's at people you feel like you disagree with, or it's at companies, maybe not even in the underwear space, but that you think are doing a really great job with what they're doing and you want to emulate them more?
Yeah. I mean, in the underwear space, I really can't point to anyone. I mean, no one in our company actually has direct experience in the underwear space.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Which I think is, it wasn't by design, but it forces us to kind of take a different perspective. But the companies that I look up to are really like companies like Sweetgreen. Mm-hmm. I love what Reformation's doing in terms of a lot of their messaging and manufacturing locally and the sustainability behind it. But yeah, these are again mission-based companies that have a purpose, and it's more than just selling an item of clothing or a salad. It's really trying to bring a community together and create a tribe, and that's something that we're working really hard on.
I think the subscriber aspect of that really helps, because you're creating a more long-term relationship with your customers. And it sounds maybe a little weird to buy underwear as a subscription. Did you find that, is that the main way people interface with you? Is that the main way people buy from you? Or is it a smaller percentage? Do you feel like that's like, those are your core fans in a way?
We have a lot of customers that don't necessarily subscribe, but I mean, it makes up about a third of our business. And they definitely are, I would say, our brand evangelists. They love getting a new pair in the mail every month and interacting with the brand on social and posting photos of their new prints. And so it's definitely a fun way of engaging with our company and our brand monthly. But then we have people who buy in packs once a year, and they're kind of happy doing that, and it's a little bit more convenient for them. So, you know, I'm proud that we've got a couple different ways to shop on our website. I think a lot of companies kind of force you down a particular path. And I think having the flexibility of allowing customers to kind of shop how they prefer is definitely key.
How do you answer that question of why should someone subscribe versus buy in packs?
Well, I mean, I think it's a personal thing, but I mean, for someone who's really trying to upgrade their underwear drawer very quickly, maybe you start off with a pack and then you subscribe so you can kind of get the new freshness of like our new designs every single month. And it's also like a matter of like how, you know, what's your day-to-day like? If you're working out 3-4 days a week, you know, and you need that extra pair every single day. And it's a lot of like lifestyle as well. But I would like to think that, you know, people need 2 pairs of underwear a day.
Yeah. Interesting. Do you feel like the subscription business model, like what's the health of that? Because I think there's a lot of excitement around it for a certain period of time. I think that has like somewhat petered off to some extent, or it's like plateaued to a certain level. And then some businesses are doing more or less well within that Do you feel like it's just kind of reached its like natural place of certain businesses are good for subscriptions, maybe others aren't? Like, what's your perspective on the general kind of that kind of trend that sort of happened for a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, I think you'll still see a lot of new subscription-based companies come out. I think there's a ton of products that you could use and you don't necessarily want to worry about going to the store for anymore. So naturally, razor blades, I would hope underwear too, right? Like it's not something that I want to be going to the store to buy. So I don't know if it's probably it was kind of the daily deal sites of like 10 years ago.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it maybe hit its peak a couple of years ago, but I still think that there's a lot of room for growth in the space. And I'm excited to kind of see what the next couple subscription companies will be that come out.
Yeah, it seems like there are these moments in time where new business model innovations come about, and you know the internet allowed for subscription businesses to really take off. I mean, they're not a new concept. People have subscribed to things forever, and there's you know mail order is not new and that kind of stuff. But now it kind of feels like it's reached a point where maybe it's a little more clear where it works best. And that's a good thing, I think, because you don't have as many companies that are starting with that model, but maybe it doesn't work as well for them.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I just saw a toothbrush company launch not too long ago.
Yeah, so that's a great example. I mean, it's one of those things that you want to replenish.
Yeah, I think it's just also figuring out the economics and price points. But I think as like it becomes easier to manufacture, cheaper to ship out items and fulfill, like you'll start seeing a lot of these companies kind of reemerge.
Is lifetime value and that kind of stuff, are those important metrics to you guys, or what are the things that you really measure?
Yeah, I mean, lifetime value is probably one of the most important metrics, and your cost for acquiring a customer. That's definitely like the two biggest metrics and KPIs we kind of track. But, you know, there's also really important things like NPS, understanding your net promoter score and how your customers are kind of talking about your brand. Paid media is definitely great, but, you know, creating a brand where your customers are doing the marketing for you is really like the place to be. And so that's a big focus for us. Friends and family are our number two biggest source of new customers. And so I feel like we are creating that brand that, you know, people want to share. And it's also finding there's a lot of people that want to be early adopters of a brand, and being on podcasts, like it's a channel that's really has been discovered by people that have that mindset of being early adopters of something. And so it's cool to see the kind of that like-mindedness crossover from, you know, someone that's being an early adopter on a podcast and then wanting to also discover new brands, because then they're generally the ones that are going out and telling their friends of these cool new things they discovered, or the podcast they just listened to, or some new book that they just read, right? So it's really trying to find those customers and have them be your evangelist.
Yeah, most people, if they know MeUndies, my friends know about it from your podcast ads. Because I listen to a number of podcasts where, you know, the hosts will just, I don't know how you guys feel about that, or if you'll like go listen and sample and see like who's doing what with the ad read. But, you know, you provide a certain amount of content for them to, but then they'll just freestyle with whatever their audience likes to hear, and it gets pretty wild sometimes. Do you keep tabs on that?
Yeah, I mean, we love listening to the host reads. You know, Bill Burr and Joe Rogan and Tim Ferriss, like these. I mean, we work with them obviously, and
Harmontown is one that I listen to. I've listened to a little bit, and his reads for MeUndies are pretty hilarious.
I haven't heard of those. So we sponsor these shows, but what we really look for is for someone that really resonates with our brand, loves our product, and so before we even engage with them on any level, we'll send them out product, get their feedback, see if they really love what we're doing and what we're going for. And if there's alignment and, you know, it's something that they feel connects with their audience, then we'll take it a step further. And so I think that kind of comes out naturally in the reads. I love listening to like Bill Burr or Joe Rogan riff, and then you'll see it on social. All the customers will kind of, you know, their supporters go out and, you know, talk about whether they just got their first pair or the jingle or whatnot. And so it's really interesting to see them support their hosts as well.
Yeah, so you guys have tried a lot of things. I mean, Instagram is very strong for you guys, Facebook, podcasts. Are you constantly experimenting with new things? Have you guys gone into whether it's like stories or Snapchat or all those types of areas as well?
Yeah, I mean, we're constantly testing new channels and seeing what resonates and what works. You have to be ahead of the curve because at a certain point, there's a lot of saturation that comes into a new space and the economics start not penciling out as much. But yeah, I mean, we're constantly trying to be fresh and try new things and have fun. So we're working with Snapchat. You know, we do a lot of stuff on Instagram, like you said, and always looking for that next new vertical.
Yeah. How do you decide, like, how much to invest in something that is completely new? Or is it just nowadays it's so easy to just put little experiments out there without having to invest too much into it?
I mean, we like testing new channels. We've got a small budget kind of set aside for that, those type of tests. And you always like to start off small and work with whoever the partner is. If it's a new vertical or channel, they're generally of the mindset that they understand that they need to work with you to make it work out early on. So normally kind of start small, and then if it's working, kind of scale. Our team is kind of creative, and so they'll think outside the box of like where we could potentially advertise, or taking a channel that typically someone isn't advertising a product and then creating that kind of relationship. So you may see us in a coffee shop on a sleeve, or you know, on a podcast, or you know, on a Facebook ad, whatnot, which is obviously a little bit more traditional. But you know, some of these forms of advertisement weren't traditional 5 years ago.
Oh yeah, 2 years ago. I mean, stories is brand new. You know, these types of things. It's funny to say, oh, Facebook, it's very traditional, but these things are moving so fast now. Like you said, I mean, it gets saturated, but also the prices increase very dramatically. You know, Facebook ads are constantly going up in price. And so you're always sort of searching for what is the next thing? What is the next underpriced channel that we can be a part of?
Yeah, and also what's pretty amazing is a lot of the older traditional platforms are kind of coming back.
Really?
So direct mail, you know, we're seeing a lot of brands kind of advertise in that space now, which is interesting. I mean, I think it's funny because that's where it kind of all started.
I just got one of those letters in the mail where it was like an envelope with 10 different online brands, each had their own flyer. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I got one in the mail as well. So
I don't know what that is. I'm very curious about that, and I wonder if it actually works.
Yeah, we've tested it, and I think we're gonna see how we can kind of make it a little bit more fun and interesting.
Yeah,
again, like whatever you test, you kind of have to put your own spin on it. But yeah, that's a super interesting new channel we're looking at.
Physical retail. Have you ever considered doing anything like that?
Yeah, actually, like right before I came here, we were looking at a space. Retail is a channel we're definitely very interested in, and hopefully looking to launch our first store by early next year.
Wow, that's a big project. What's your philosophy around that? Is it still more of an experiment, and you want to try kind of like your own flagship type of store, not within other stores?
Yeah, so I mean, the philosophy there is that 90% of sales commerce is still done offline.
Right.
There's definitely a wrong way of doing it. You see like kind of the Armageddon right now of retail with all these brands that have got, you know, 500, 1,000 stores kind of shutting down left and right. But I think there's a thoughtful way of doing it. And hopefully, you know, it's something that we're going to be testing. 2 years ago, we did a pop-up on Abercrombie. And we got some really good early signs and reads, and kind of looking to kind of double down and create a place where, you know, our customers can interact with our brand, test our product, feel it, you know, all the things you can't do online. So we're very excited about the opportunity.
I'm very curious to see how, you know, everything that we just talked about around your brand and your values like end up translating into like a physical space, because the web is this window on your computer or on your phone. A physical experience is like this three-dimensional thing where all the senses are engaged, and I feel like that's a really cool opportunity for you guys. I'm very curious to see how that goes.
Yeah, and we have such a fun, adventurous brand that like the physical world of MeUndies is going to be a pretty awesome place.
Yes, I want to talk to you about that. I have some ideas. If people want to find out more about MeUndies, obviously they can go to MeUndies.com. all the social places. Is there anything else you want to send people towards?
Yeah, I mean, I would love for people to kind of explore the page and check out the About Us section and our factory page and kind of learn a little bit more about like our values and where we're kind of going and dig a little deeper. Because I think, like I said earlier, we're evolving as a brand and we're trying to constantly get better and better. So I'm just excited about the feedback we potentially get from your audience and from our customers. We're constantly listening, and I'm checking our social literally on a daily basis. So easiest way to get in touch is obviously via Twitter. But yeah, I'm excited about, you know, where things are headed over the next couple of years.
Cool. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, if you got something useful out of it, I would love to hear what that was. Consider writing a short review, could be just a sentence long, by going to iTunes and searching for Well Made. I want to hear it all. I want to hear good, bad. I want to hear your constructive criticisms. I am just trying to make this show as useful as possible for you. So tell us what you think. That is the very best way that you can support the show. Thanks, and see you next time.